That would be very interesting. Concerning that honor, also, if you get this out here, this is the these are the the songs that one sings.
Ah,
you put them on here. Two sides. Everyone should take a sheet. Is it always on the?
It's on.
It's on. So good morning, everyone. We're now going to try to uncover the origin of this special day, which is coming this evening, Lach HaOmer. Many of us have the impression it started with a plague in the time of Rabbi Akiva. The plague stopped. Or it was the day when Rabbi Akiva appointed Shimon Yochai, one of the disciples who remained after the plague, to give him semicha, to he would carry on the chain of tradition. Or it's also the day of the death of Shimon Yochai, when he revealed to his disciples, in fact one of them asked also to write down special revelations which came to him directly or through the prophet Eliyahu, and he had kept them to himself and not yet revealed them to anyone else. But on the day of his death he saw it was necessary to reveal it to his disciples to carry on the esoteric tradition, which is to some extent the inheritance of the prophetic traditions. You'll excuse me saying, but if someone wants to do something else there, please do it somewhere else. Not to the machines, it's disturbing. But now I'd like you all to turn to the Chumash. And we know we're in the period of the Omer. So let me ask you, we have an ancient tradition, if you understand the significance of any term, you look at the first time it's mentioned in the Chumash. Which is the first time the word Omer is mentioned in the Chumash? Let's hear your point of view.
Second day of Pesach. You have to count, sort to count.
Where, which parsha is that mentioned in?
I would imagine it's in Shemot. I don't know. The book of Shemot.
The book of Shemot, yes, where? Can anyone tell me? Where is that written? Which parsha? Which parsha is it written in? Well,
I don't know.
When did you read it in the parsha?
Last week or 2 weeks ago.
Last week, you're right. You read it last week.
Ah, but
the Emor, which describes the festival.
Yeah,
so it's not in the book of Shemos, it's the book of Vayikra, which we read last week. Quite right. But that's not the first time it's mentioned. It's mentioned before then. And it's
Bereishis, probably.
When Bereishis?
I don't remember that. I saw it.
I don't think in the root. Ein Memreish, I don't think it's mentioned in Bereishis. Omer certainly is not. So, it is mentioned though in Parshat Bishalach. Shortly after the great miracle of the Yamsuf, the Red Sea, So it's very, very significant. If you could turn to page 81, the Jerusalem Bible.
Page?
81, the Jerusalem Bible. It says this is in chapter 16 of Shemot. It says the people of Israel, Vayisa me'ilim, Elim was near the Red Sea. They traveled away from Elim. And said, they came to the desert of Sin, which was in between Elam and between Sinai. And here, which we don't find frequently, but here there's a specific date mentioned, on which day it happened. It says that it was on the 15th of the second month. If you reckon from the time when the people went out from Eretz Mitzrayim, you can ask why did it mention the date? Was it so important? Other than the fifth, which is the second month?
Yeah.
So the 15th, that was 2 days ago. Now we're on the 17th. So on the 15th, from the time when they went out from the land of Egypt. Now to understand this verse and why the date is mentioned, why does it say, wants to know how long it was since they left Egypt, we can connect this with what it says earlier. You don't have to turn the page really, I've said it, referred to it many times. The first revelation of Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu, when he revealed his mission at the burning bush, at Sinai. So he told him that when you take out the people from Egypt, they should serve God on this mountain, or through this mountain. And there it says Tavdun, 50. So 50 days from the exodus from Egypt, it took till you come to the mountain of Sinai. And the tradition is, he turns it over to the people, and then the people in fact counted each day. From the time they left Egypt, which was on the 15th of Nisan, then they counted the days. It doesn't say dates, generally, what happened in between, but there were many tests in between. I mean, the seventh day afterwards, they witnessed the enormous miracle of the splitting of the sea. Shortly afterwards, they complained that there were 3 days without water, and they only found bitter water. The bitter water turned sweet. That was a test. Now we come to the next test. And this took place on, so you can work it out, on the 15th.
It's the day after Pesach Sheni.
Yes. Yeah, the day after Pesach Sheni.
Okay.
So it was really 30 days afterwards, the exodus from Egypt. So then it says in verse 2, Kol Adat B'nei Israel, they all complained to Moshe and Aaron in the desert, and they said, who would give us our death in the hands of Hashem in the land of Egypt? We'd prefer to have died there. Mm-hmm. When we sat by the flesh pots, and when we ate our fill of bread, for you've brought us out of the wilderness to kill this whole community with hunger. Why? Because they had a little bit of matzah bread left, which lasted them, but only lasted them for a month. Yeah, when they came to the third day of Pesach Sheni, it wasn't a celebration of Pesach Sheni yet, but it didn't apply yet. But still, the bread that was left in their vessels, that's what they lived on. Now they had nothing left. They said, we're dying of hunger. Because in Egypt, we had, you know, flesh pots of Egypt. And you brought us here to this desert to kill this whole community with famine. So Hashem said to Moshe, I'm going to bring down a rain of bread from heaven for you. Mamtir lechem lechem min ha-shamayim. On which you will say the blessing, Amotzi lechem min ha-shamayim. That's not in the text, but that again. The whole people, the people will go out and they will collect this bread from heaven day by day. And that way I will see if they are following my Torah, my guidance, or not. So there's even the concept of this bread from heaven was to teach people, the people of Israel, how to follow the Torah. Deep legend. He said on the sixth day, they should prepare whatever they can collect, and there'll be, their notices, they'll be damo from what they've collected day by day. Then Moshe and Aaron said, it's over to the whole Bnei Israel. I said, from this you will know that it's God who took you up from the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of Hashem when he hears your murmurings against Hashem. And what are we? We're just messengers. Why do you murmur against us? And Moshe said, this shall be when Hashem will give you in the evening meat to eat, and the morning your fill of bread, when Hashem hears your murmurings which you murmur against him. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against Hashem. And Moshe said to Aaron, say to all the congregation of the children of Israel, come near before Hashem, for he has heard your murmurings. And it came to pass, and Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the children of Israel, and looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of Hashem appeared in a cloud. And then Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. Speak to them, saying, at evening you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am Hashem, your God, which means I am really the master of your sustenance. And it came to pass at the evening the quails came up and covered the camp. And the morn the dew lay round about the camp, and when the lay of dew was gone, behold, on the face of the wilderness there lay a fine, flaky substance, as fine as the hoarfrost of the ground. And when the Israel saw it, they said one to the other, Monhu. It is Mon. Now generally it's translated here, what is it? For they knew not what it was. But still, if the word Mon is supposed to describe Ma, they should have called it Ma, not Mon.
Mahu.
That's right. Why do they call it Mon?
Because it fell down, like the letter Nun?
We'll discuss it soon. Explain it. And Moshe said to them, this is the bread which Hashem has given you to eat. This is the thing which the Lord has commanded. Gather of it every man according to his eating. And here's the first time it mentions the word Omer in the Chumash. Omer la Gulgolet. For each person there should be an Omer. What is an Omer?
An Omer is a midah, is a portion.
Which portion? We'll see soon. Let's go further. Each person will be given enough for the persons in his household. Each Lashabolotika. Everyone should take whatever he needs for his family, and he'll find enough for his family for every person. So then the Bnei Israel did this, and they collected, some collected more, some less. And what happened? Each portion could be measured in the omer. So here we see omer is really a measuring unit. Yeah. So it mentions the Omer in this passage three times, that they measured it in the Omer. So the Omer seems to be the measuring vessel. That's how they measured it. And what happened when they measured it? That Lohidif, he who took a lot, didn't have anything extra. It turned out to be exactly according to the number of people who required food. Mamet, and a person who collected less, he had enough. In other words, the concept of the Omer, the measurement, was the measurement which each person required, each person in his family already required, was given to them. And Moshe said, don't leave anything over. Don't store it. Don't hoard it at all. But they didn't listen to Moshe. And people did leave it over to the next day. What happened?
Worms.
So, it bred worms and stank. And Moshe's angry with them. So therefore they learned in this way, each one to collect every morning. If they didn't collect it, then when the sun came out, then it melted, disappeared. And then on the sixth day, they were able to collect a double portion. Shnei Omer Uchad, each person of each family received two measures. And all the princes of the congregation, they came, told Moshe, what's happened? Why do we have double? So he said, this is what Hashem said. Tomorrow, the seventh day, will be Shabbat. What is Machal? Whatever you bake, bake. Whatever you cook, cook. And whatever is left over, you have to leave and preserve it till the next day, and it will not go wrong. But you'll have it the next day, without having to go out. And they left it in the morning, Hashem, and it did not stink. And there are no worms in it. So Moshe said, yes, eat it today. Today you have to eat what has been preserved until this day to demonstrate to you the observance of Shabbat. And therefore enjoy it. Shabbat Hayom Lashem. You won't find it in the field. You're given it from yesterday. 6 days you gather. On the seventh day, Shabbat, it won't be there. So what happened? On the seventh day, people said, oh, let's see if there's more outside. They went out to look for it. They didn't find anything. Then it says, Hashem said to Moshe, when are you going to refuse to keep my commandments and my Torah? Because this is the essence of keeping the Torah. See, Hashem has given you the Shabbat. That's why he gives you on the sixth day a double portion of bread. Stay in your place, in your home. Don't go out from your home looking for the food. And then the people decided, right, we're going to rest on the Shabbat. And the people called it Mon. It says again, now they call it Mon. And it was like coriander seed, right, and the taste of it like wafers made with honey. And Moshe said, this is the thing that Hashem commands. Again he says, fill an omer. Take a vessel and fill it with omer, this measure, to keep it in mishmeret, in the wilderness, to demonstrate the way in which you had food in the midbar and laid up before Hashem to be kept for generations. And then it says, so you have three times mentioned here the Omer as a measure. And then it says, the children of Israel did eat the manna for 40 years until they came to inhabited land. They ate the mon until they came to the borders of the land of Canaan. And now the concluding verse is, you want to know what the Omer is? It's a Sirin to Eifahu. It's a tenth part of an Eifah, which is defined elsewhere also in Chumash later. It's a measurement. A measuring vessel of an omer, which is clearly the average amount of food that a person needs for the day. But what happened in the desert? In the desert, they were shown how it fitted whatever were the needs of each family, however many there were, and if they were very old or very young, when they perhaps required less food, or their middle age, when they required more food. Each one found in the mon whatever was needed for him. So we've got a few questions on this. First of all, what does the root amah really mean?
Amah.
Ayin mem resh. What does it mean? You say it's a measure. If it's an asirut eifah, why couldn't it be called tenth of an eifah? The normal volume measurements in the Tanakh are an eifah. No. Asirut eifah, tenth of an eifah, is what we might call the average essential need of food for each human being. An average, tenth of an eifah. So thereby you can measure more or less how much flour you require to create the staple diet of each individual.
I know why.
Yes.
It's for the people, for the am. Am is Ayin Mem.
Okay, fine. Okay, could be. Ayin Mem means many other. Ayin Mem means to be together. Yes, you're right. But still, we've got to find out more what it means. What does the verb mean? If you want to understand the meanings of nouns in Hebrew, it's different to most Western languages. Most Western languages, verbs are based upon nouns, upon things, upon objects. But in Hebrew, even the word thing and object is basically a verb. Davar, an expression of speech of Hashem, or a chefetz. A chefetz means what you desire, so it's a question of an activity. Could be a mental activity or a physical activity. But the root of nearly all words in Hebrew is the concept of an activity. But even things that exist in the world, they're a product of the speech of Hashem, of His will. So we've got to analyze what is the meaning of omer. But before doing so, I want to analyze what's the meaning of the mon. It's called mon. So we have a rule as follows. There are often reasons given in the psukim for the use of words and names. But generally speaking, there is an additional meaning which is connected with the root, rather than what they call it. They didn't know what to call it, so they call it mahu, what is it? But they used the word mon. So the mon comes from the root, verbal root, which means, maybe you tell me?
Mana.
What's mana mean?
A portion.
To give a portion. The verbal root is to appoint. Like a minyan. What's a minyan? It's to count. To count, but counting in the sense of appointing. It's accounting, really. There's counting just to say the lispor, to count numbers. And there's limnot, yameh kerodah, means to give an appointed purpose to each day. And a mamune in Hebrew is called someone who's appointed to a particular task. And a mana is a portion. It's given, Hashem is not called chalki, Hashem is given to every human being, is given his portion of life and his portion of sustenance for life. And if you study the use of the word mana in Tehillim especially, you'll see it's not only a question of how much food you have, or how much money you have, but it's an approach to life. Referred to as follows by the Pirkei Avot, Ezeo Ashir. Okay, what's it say in Pirkei Avot? Who's a rich person?
Hasameach b'chelko.
Happy with his portion.
Happy with his portion. Chelko is mana, it's my portion. So our attitude to everything physical in the world, and in fact to everything in the world, is it's given to us by Hashem, and each person is given his portion. He's given his portion of livelihood, and Hashem looks after him. So this is why the mon is called a testing of the people of Israel to reach the higher level from the time they were in Egypt to the time they would receive the Torah. So they had to be tested. Because only if you're tested, you really grow. How did Hashem test them? He said, okay, I'm going to test you. Have you learned the test to be happy with the portion which you're given? Or you personally always think you don't have enough, and you go out and try to have competition with other people. You think other people are taking what's yours. No, you've got to learn to be happy with your portion and not regard your fellow human beings as competitors. Each one's given his portion in life, both in the physical world, but also in everything else. Some people have a portion that they're given a very high intelligence, others are given low intelligence. So a person shouldn't complain. Of course he should try to use whatever intelligence he has to grow. When it comes to being jealous of what other people have, you have to remove that jealousy. You've got to work yourself to have enough for your family. And Hashem is willing always to give you enough. And you have to stop trying to find it in the field on Shabbat. When you become a nation, you'll have to stop trying to find sustenance for the nation in the seventh year. The seventh year is an extension of the 7 days of the week. And the Shabbat, it's the beginning of next week's parsha, the concept of this, when you come to the land of Israel, and you have to go to the land, it says, like one person, like one heart, the whole nation, then you have to learn also to recognize that Hashem will give you his portion. And you have to dedicate the Shabbat to a spiritual life, which includes also improving all your midot, and not being happy with the portion that you're given. Whatever work you're able to do in the week, when it comes to Shabbat, you close the work, and you go and enjoy life. You have real spiritual and physical pleasure from whatever Hashem has given you. And don't go out and toil and trouble yourself with the race you have in order to make ends meet. You know, here you have the concept, the frequent we say, you know, a person can't complete the month. So I don't have enough money to complete the month with the salary that he gets. Of course, we should always have that attitude to people who say that, to help them. However, a person himself should say, when the Shabbat comes, I finish with my work, I forget about it, whatever bills and debts I have, and what I have to do with that, I leave to after Shabbat. On Shabbat, I'm going to dedicate myself whatever food I've got to thank Hashem for it, and to enjoy it with my family, and make sure that everybody is happy. We will learn to be Sameach B'Chelkeinu. So once we understand the Parshat Hamon, which is a very deep teaching, in fact, when we say in the chapter of creation, which we recited Kiddush, Vayavorech Elokim et Yom HaShabbat Vayakadesh Oto. So what was the special blessing of the Shabbat? Rashi says, Rashi Bercho B'mon. The mon was a double portion. You know, there's in Germany, they used to call, these traditions kept up today, but you call it Berschen. What's Berschen? Berschen is the challah. The challah is called Berschen. And on many challah knives, they put the blessing Birchat Hashem, the blessing of Hashem, because cutting the challahs is fulfilling Vayavorech Elokim et Yom HaShabbat. Hashem gave blessing to the Shabbat day. You should enjoy the food more. You're given the double portion on Shabbat. That's why you take two challot. That's why even called the knife is called the Berschen knife. Berschen is like a Germanization, or you call it ancient Yiddish. Yiddishization of the ancient type. The ancient type is more German than Yiddish. It's called Birchat. Birchat, the Bracha of Hashem. And it was sanctified. It's sanctified because you won't go and find your panasai elsewhere. So you might as well stay at home and have your double portion you're given on Shabbos. That's the concept. Ichlu hayom, it says three times in the day you learn of the three sudot on which you have Lechem Mishneh. So that's all to do with the mom. So how does the omer come into it? So I'll tell you, if you study the Tanakh and the roots of the Tanakh, the root omer really means to bind. It's used also to the senses. You'll find it also, those who learn it, in Hilchot Shabbat, there's a lachar called Me'amer. What's that, Me'amer? One of the 39 melachot. Means to make bundles of ears of grain. In the procedure of harvesting, after the harvest, you take all the grains together and make them into a bundle. Then the bundles are collected and then you start doing the winnowing to get the grains out from the stalks and from the chaff. So that's called ma'amer. So the root of it here is to bind. What's binding mean? Binding means, also the character means a commitment. Try to control your appetites. The human being, we've got hunger, and even if we've got enough to eat, we've got hunger for other tastes. Taste buds start working, then we want to eat other things. And sometimes we want to have a special food, we make big banquets, and we want to, some of us like also to show our wealth, so we make a luxury banquet. So, whatever our situation is, do not think that there's any justification for desecrating the Shabbat in order to have more food or more possessions. And this was what the people were being taught. And they taught it as an outlook upon life. So the Omer represents our attitude primarily to the physical aspects of life. We have to Ezer Asher Sameh Pechelko. In other words, you don't define a rich man by what he has, but by what he's missing. So the top millionaire in the world, the top billionaire, multi-billionaire in the world, probably his ambition is when he comes to the top of the Forbes list, that next year he'll have double the amount. And the one who's not right at the top, it's only a few grades down, he'll say, next year I want to be at the top. So he's missing a lot. He's missing many billions of dollars. The people near the top of the Forbes list. And now they've also given out in the Jewish mass media lists of the Jewish millionaires, which I'm doubtful that it's a good idea. There's so much anti-Semitism around. We have a principle in the Torah, don't be ostentatious with your wealth. So we have a huge billionaire. In fact, I met him a few times. We lived here, he's moved to London. And he just saw an account that he has bought for himself the most expensive home in the world. So all the land, most modern luxuries described at length in an area. I used to live quite near that area. It was used to be known then as well as, you know, the rich street in Hampstead, but you know it's a big problem when these things become the publicity is given to the way in which Jews become rich. That's often caused a lot of problems, and we shouldn't. Chazal say the blessing is given to those things that are hidden from the eye. And we start being ostentatious about our wealth. What a good idea. But still, the Hashem, I know that even people, some people, they give nearly all that wealth to charity. But they live a humble way. But they can start describing luxuries which they indulge privately is a big problem. In any case, the Omer, this when did the Mon fall? On which date? You know when it fell?
Every day.
When did it start?
First of Omer.
Which was the first day?
First of Omer.
Pesach Sheni.
No, first day of the Omer.
No. What's the first time when when there was this omer mentioned, which I've just gone through the parsha, which date? It says the date. It says the complaints began. The complaints began on the 15th. On the 15th of Iyar. Gives the date, 15th of Iyar. If you read carefully through the chronology of the verses we just read through, it took 3 days, if you could say even more, until the Omer fell on the morning of Lag BaOmer. That's when the Omer fell. That is when the Mon fell, as referred to as the Omer.
Lag BaOmer?
Yes. Lag BaOmer is the day upon which the Mon fell to the people of Israel in the desert.
Whoa.
And it's emphasized that the measure why. Why, if it's Asirut to Eifa, I could have said, okay, the Mon that fell was Asirut to Eifa. No, they say it's the Omer. And why do they call it the Omer? Because the Omer represents the state from minimum diet for every person who belongs to Am Yisrael, which is personally supervised by Hashem. And the whole wandering in the desert was the training ground for the holy people. To become a holy people, to be able to receive the Torah. To be able to receive the Torah, you've got to walk in the ways of Hashem. In fact, I'll go a little further. I remember I was once asked to write an article on Marxism. Yeah. So I quoted in school, one of the exams. I think it was the matriculation certificate. So I took the Pasuk from Devarim, where it repeats again, you should know Hashem by Yamcha by Yerevecha. He made you feel hunger in the desert. And then he sent you the Mon. Why did he send the Mon? The man who di achaki lo alechon avadu yechiyadam, kal kol mutsopi Hashem yechiyadam. To teach you that man does not live by bread alone, he lives by that which comes out from the mouth of Hashem. In order to teach you that the bread that you eat at all times in the desert, you had it in a special miraculous manner. But after you become in the land, you have ordinary bread, you should know ordinary bread also comes from the mouth of Hashem. And thereby I said, this is the mistake of Marxism. Marx is right when he uses the concept which is developed by Bernard Shaw, Arms and the Man, if you've read it. Nearly all wars and problems of mankind are based upon the economic struggle of human society. Human society has formed themselves into groups, into different classes, working class, capitalist class, those who own the land, those who work the land, they become enemies one of the other, one tries to exploit the other as much as possible, so we have to go and destroy capitalism, and we should know that nearly all the wars in the world are because of the economic struggle. The one nation says, I need more territory because I need more industry, I need more agriculture. So therefore they try to expand and they fight with others. And this is certainly one of the major sources of warfare. And therefore in Hebrew, the word lechem means, what's the root of lechem?
Lechema. Go.
Lilachem.
For yourself.
To battle. To have fights, to have wars. The basis of wars. Milchama. Milchama is connected with lechem. It's one of the main sources. That's why in the Hebrew language, lechem is a concept. You have to struggle for sustenance, for existence, as you find in the animal world. The struggle in the animal world also. They try to get hold of prey, of some carnivorous ones. They go and eat other animals, the herbivorous ones, they want to get as much vegetables as possible. And they snatch away from another one. We human beings are similar. We also. Milchama is because we have a big appetite. Individual appetite, a common one, a class one, or a national one, or an international one. We want to have the whole world, some nations. And thereby endangering the whole world. That's milchama, lechem, closely connected. And in Hebrew, most words have to do with food, have to do with weapons. Mazon You know what Zon means? The Zayin, what does Zayin mean? The arm. Clay Zayin are vessels of warfare. And the letter Zayin is a pictograph of a sword. Because the Arabic Tarashuri or pictographs, also in the Ktaki. It's like a sword. So this is Mazon. Then you have another word, Tseda means provisions. But what does Latsud mean?
Hunt.
To trap. To hunt and to trap. They're all words of the greed of the human being.
Yeah.
But instead of using all these words, we're taught, don't regard food as Tseda, as Mazon, or as Lechem, which are all a certain aspect of competitive destruction in order to survive. Look at it as Mon. Look at it as a portion given by Hashem. And if you learn to live according to that principle, you recognize even Lo al Lechem levado yichya adam, recognize al kol motzeh pi Hashem, it's all the result of the will of Hashem, what he gives you. And then you'll be able to live according to the Torah. So it's a condition of the Torah. And that's the concept which started on Lag BaOmer, written in the Chumash. Because Omer also means to bind you. How do you do it? Control your instincts. Don't let an animalistic instinct make you into an animal. That you fight others and destroy others. Especially when you have further progress with the power of the mind to control nature, you're going to use your control of nature to go and kill others so that you can live. You can have more territory, you're going to murder others, more money or more companies or more get to the top of the billions, you're going to tread on other people. No, that's not the way. That's the way of the animals. You've got to become a human being and grow from the Omer. That's when I'm from the Omer here, we jump to the Omer of the first day of Pesach. When we're already accustomed to the concept of making an offering from food. The offerings for food, the meal offerings, are all an aspect of recognizing that really all the products of nature, they're created by Hashem. Hashem wants us to use them for His service. So as you know, keep that measurement of Omer in mind. It means self-control. And therefore, when you come out from Egypt, and you're able already to start having your own food, afterwards you go to the land of Israel, and you have a temple, and you're able to bring offerings, then you should take a small barley offering. And what was the body? It's not called the Chumash barley, it's called the Chumash Omer. Why? Because that little bit of barley, which introduces making use of the harvest each year, when you recognize Hashem made you into a holy nation, which you wanted to do on the day of Pesach, on the night of Seder, then you've got to learn, from now on, regard all food, all sustenance, all wealth, as a portion given by Hashem. And that's why you count the Omer Dafka. Because that's an important condition to get to that higher level, that you recognize Hashem gives provision. And look, so we see it's really, Lag BaOmer is such a significant day in the Chumash, if you start digging a bit deeper, that's the day when the month started, when this lesson started. And that's why we can understand why the plague for Rabbi Akiva stopped on Lag BaOmer. That you should learn, because human society to live and give honor one to the other depends a lot on substituting the significance of Lechem to become Mon. You don't fight with your fellow man, you give him honor in all areas of life. The people of Kiva, who put up this principle, this klal is the essence and is based upon people exercising self-control. I'll give us, let's speak simply in the yeshiva. Very simple. How can you become a Ben Torah if you go in the dining room? So the dining room is right next to Beit HaMidrash. Beit HaMidrash, you learn Torah. Go in the dining room and you go and eat a double portion, and maybe there's your fellow man also learning, will not find a portion. But the portions are called the number of people given. You give it, take it up a portion right at the beginning, then it's like stealing. You're not, you got it left in me. I love this food, I'll take it up a portion like three times. No, you're not allowed to do it. If you want to double, you've got to wait at everybody's hut. Yeah, all sorts of times people have to reserve. Don't take reserves from somebody else. But it happened even in yeshiva. You know, youngsters and so on, they're hungry. You've got to ask, is their portion over? Come. Sometimes the person even has his private food and somebody else takes it. So that's the lesson of the Omer. How can you learn Torah and do such a thing? So So when it came to Lag BaOmer, the plague stopped. The reason why it stopped. And if you go more deeply, the whole essence, one of the main essentials of everything to do with the Kabbalah, and all the Sifri Kabbalah emphasize it from the earliest ones of the prophets who originated. And then if you go on in the early Kabbalistic writings, and the Arizal and Chaim Vital, they say, Midot. If you're going to approach Torah learning without midot, and midot ben adam l'chaveiro, that's the training ground, and you want to go and grab somebody else's portion, like in the desert, you go and grab somebody else's portion and go rotten right away. You can't go and kick somebody else's. It says it just became rotten straight away. It wasn't intended for you. And there were different places where the mount dropped and so on, as you find in the words of Chazal and the Midrashim. So, it applies to all of us in all our life. We've got to learn, control, and eat. Eating is used as the aspect of one of the basic instincts which we do need to fulfill in order to survive. It's not something which you can postpone, like other instincts. You can postpone the sound of Jews under certain circumstances. You need a daily sustenance, in some sort, or you can skip a day. So you can't do without it. If you say, well, everything is justified. No, it's not. There's so many laws concerning what goes in the mouth, just as there are so many laws what goes out of the mouth. Because one is dependent on the other as well. If what goes in is really kosher, in every way, also ben adam l'chaveiro, what comes out will also be better. And vice versa. A person who's too loose with his tongue, it speaks bad things also, you'll find in other things also, if he's self-centered in his speech and doesn't have consideration for others, you'll often find he's also self-centered in the way in which he approaches my sustenance, the money that I need. So he words, some things that sell things aren't true, and he does deceitful things against his neighbor. So there we've got to try and keep this principle of honor. That when Matthew Arnold said the human being is a bundle of conflicting emotions, yeah, it's true, he is, but you've got to take that bundle of conflicting emotions and harmonize them in the way of the Torah and control them, and then that bundle will become a source of leading a high level moral life. So that's the deeper lesson. Was the continuation of the first Lag BaOmer with all the lessons that come afterwards. It's all interrelated. Even the high level of even what the Shem Benechoi revealed on that day, all has to do with these concepts. So let us try to fulfill it.
But why is it?
As we say, the highest quality is Lev Tov. You want the mnemonic? What's the numerical number of Lev?
22.
And Tov?
It's 49. All together.
That's how much it all together. So, by Lag, when it comes to Lag BaOmer, we should reach the level of having a heart. It's having a heart for all other people. The person's got a heart. You know, got a Jewish heart. But if you really want to make it a good heart, you've got to add the other 17 to bring you to giving, reaching a high level of receiving the Torah.